pollution havens, or the notion of pollution havens could happen around Israel's shores, when countries around us, and very many of them, unfortunately still, have very poor both environmental laws, or even worse, missing environmental implementation. I'll give you an example. In Jordan, the building of the Jordan Gateway Industrial Project, a project that Weird Friends of the Earth and many other NGOs tried to stop taking place. But we couldn't stop it taking place because the builders, the investors, were able to build without an environmental assessment ever being made, because Jordan doesn't have a law or doesn't have a regulation. It actually has a law, but it never promulgated a regulation, and therefore there's no need to build an industrial to undertake an environmental assessment beside, in a location beside the River Jordan, a river of such cultural and religious significance to so many people around the world. So we couldn't stop that building taking place because the laws were not there in the land where that industrial state was built. But that industrial state not only impacts Jordan, it also impacts Israel, because the pollution of an industrial state beside a border of one country transcends and moves across to the other border. When Alexandra a moment ago mentioned Egypt and the textile industry of Alexandria Bay, well, I really encourage you to go visit Alexandria Bay and to see how the color of that bay changes every time the textile industry changed the dyes of their plants. It's pink one time, it's bluish another time, it's purple another time, because the sewage is dumped into the bay with no treatment, because the standards are not there. So we're very likely, if regulations are not put in place as part and parcel of the agreement, to see pollution. Not only in Israel would we have to battle with the pollution that we produce, and we produce a great deal, but we'd have to battle with the pollution that our neighbours bring, and that companies coming from Europe who have to meet stringent stringent environmental regulations in Europe can come and enjoy the benefits of no environmental regulation or little environmental regulation near our shores. And that is a threat that the environment community and all our government departments, all our politicians need to wake up to. It's a threat that all the environmentalists and the environment ministries of all our neighbouring countries also need to wake up to, need to meet that challenge. And there again, we have a great framework to be working together, and that's what we're trying to do at Friends of the Earth Middle East. But we see the free trade agreement also as an opportunity, to look at not only to try and raise environmental standards around the Mediterranean as a whole, but also to relook at how we are extracting our resources, how we are producing our goods in this country, and particularly those goods that are being exported. The relationship that has defined the trade relations between Israel and the European Union were drawn in 1975, and that was the first cooperation agreement signed between Israel and the European Union, which basically was a free trade agreement, and it was an agreement that gradually reduced tariffs from the European side and from the Israeli side that enabled the free flow of goods. What type of goods were we exchanging? A great deal. What type of goods were we exchanging, were we trading that negatively impacted our environment? Well, I would say that many of the goods, particularly in the mineral industry, the goods focusing around the minerals extracted from the Dead Sea, are a very good example of how Israel has sold short its environment. The potash industry removed from the Dead Sea, the bromide industry emanating from the Dead Sea, where a great deal of the trade in bromides used as pesticides and fertilizers, of potash as a fertilizer, is sold to Europe. Not only, in fact, some 90% of the companies producing bromide and potash export their produce. 90% of the produce of those industries is exported elsewhere, with the great percentage traditionally going to the European Union. What has that meant? Well, it's meant that it's contributed to the killing of the Dead Sea, the drying up of the whole southern basin of the Dead Sea, losing some third of its surface area from 80 kilometres in length to some 50 kilometres in length. It's in the 1980s contributed to the building of an industrial zone in Ramat Chovav and bringing industries that manufacture from the bromide, from the raw bromide and from the raw potash, a whole array of chemicals that are then exported to Europe and elsewhere. chemicals that have made that part of the Negev somewhat unlivable when it comes to air pollution. Try and be the Bedouin community that lives right opposite the factory of the industrial state of Ramat Chovav. Visit the records of the medical records of the, of those communities and the cancer rates that we now, that we today see in those communities. Well, we need to develop, we need to understand that there's a relationship between how we are trading, how we are manufacturing the goods that we trade and the direct impact on our resources and on the livelihoods of our people. The agricultural sector, although agriculture is still not a full partner in a free trade agreement, Israel exports most of its agriculture to Europe. And the relationship between the all of our aquifers, be it the coastal aquifer, be it the mountain aquifer, be it the Sea of Galilee, all being below the red line, is directly related to agriculture because that is where most of our water has gone. Some in the past, some 90% today, some 50%. That agriculture is exported, or a great deal of it is exported to Europe. Now, if someone could explain to me how it could possibly make sense that Israel is exporting water to Europe when agricultural produce is overwhelmingly water. An orange is some 97% water. Flowers that Israel exports to Europe consume incredible amounts of water. When Israel, which has no water, is in fact exporting its water through another means to a water-rich country. Which makes it much worse is that the water is sold to our farmers at such a heavily subsidized rate. And if indeed farmers were paying the true rate of the resource, they would never compete. And we wouldn't be selling so much of our water through agricultural produce to Europe. So what I'm trying to get to is that since 1975 and when the first cooperation agreement between Israel and Europe came into force, we weren't prepared. Had we been prepared, had we been thinking about what is in the long-term benefit of this country, I don't think that we would have agreed to a cooperation agreement that doesn't mention or mentions the word environment in one line. And so when we talk about the future of our trading relationship with Europe, well, we have some 26 years, 27 years of experience that we should learn from. But we haven't. There hasn't been a single study undertaken to look at how the that free trade agreement from 1975 impacted the resource use and resource production in this country. The 1975 cooperation agreement was replaced in 1995 with the association agreement that came into force in June 1st, 2000. And for the first time, we start seeing some language which deals with environment. And we see this as a positive move, even though it's nowhere near sufficient and we think that the agreement needs to be improved. But Article 42, which says conservation of the environment and ecological balance shall be taken into account in the implementation of the various sectors of economic cooperation. Well, that's a good move, because now there's discussion that we need to take environment into account when dealing with economic cooperation. The challenge is how to use this this statement to our benefit, how to broaden this statement. There are other statements in the agreement which we need to refer to, and we need to learn to apply to protect our environment. Promotion of environmentally friendly agriculture. There has been some promotion of environmentally friendly agriculture, and there is Israel has been able to exploit its potential, some of its potential in sustainable agriculture and in environmentally, ecologically labelled agricultural products and exporting them to Europe. But we're far from approaching anything near trading in environmentally friendly agriculture as a whole with Europe. Then there's Article 50, which is specific to environment, and lists a whole lot of issues dealing with the potential for environmental cooperation, ensuring that various issues of environmental foray, be it sewage, be it wastes, are prevented, and that's an important step. When we look at our Ministry of Trade, we see, at least on the website, something that I think every environmentalist should be very disappointed, because Israel's trade policy is trade liberalization. Well, if that's all that Israel's trade policy is, then we're not on the road to promoting sustainable trade, because sustainable trade is a lot more complex than just liberalization. We need to decide what is appropriate to liberalize, when it's appropriate, where it's appropriate, and a general policy of trade liberalisation. If our own trade ministry markets itself, and I'm being a little bit unfair in the sense that I know that there are some policies in the trade ministry that are trying to take and are trying to move forward environmental issues. But this is how Israel sells itself. And I say that Israel sells itself cheap if Israel's policy in trade is just liberalisation. Again, just to highlight how Europe and the United States are the main trading partners of Israel. And it's no coincidence, because with Europe and the United States, we enjoy free trade agreements. Again, the terms of trade, at least with Europe, are very much in favor of Europe. And that should come as no surprise, as it came as no surprise in the Turkish example. A current and very important report of Blue Plan, which was released in November 2001, a body associated with the United Nations Environment Programme, comes and explicitly states that we have a great deal to be concerned about. This is no longer a report of Friends of the Earth Middle East or another environmental organization. This is a body associated with the United Nations, quite a conservative body. And that body is saying that environmental issues are far from being integrated into the bilateral trade agreements. The bilateral trade agreements are supposed to be the basis of the regional free trade agreement. So if we are not taking environment seriously enough at the bilateral level, then how in hell do we hope to get to a sustainable trade policy around the Mediterranean? Lack of consultation. In many cases, the trade people don't speak to the environment people around many of the countries around the Mediterranean. And the environment ministries, as interviewed by the Blue Plan, stated that forthright, that there isn't a dialogue. So if the ministries aren't talking together, then clearly we're not moving towards sustainable trade. The situation, and I think maybe we'll have some discussions on it in Israel, is that there might be some discussions between the ministries taking place. But when it comes to the annual meetings of the European-Israeli Council, environment is really not on the table. And finally, the UN study says lack of monitoring. We don't know what we're getting into. This is not Friends of the Earth. This is a UN body. We do not have enough information at hand to know where we're headed. So what are we calling for? Well, the great benefit of having Mr. Garton here with us was that it enabled us to try and push decision makers at the bilateral level here in Israel to think forward. And we were really delighted to have the opportunity to speak in front of the Economic Committee of the Knesset and present our concerns from an Israeli environmental perspective to the committee. The first time that the Knesset has ever heard about the environmental issues related to the Mediterranean Free Trade Zone. And there we called upon the committee to launch a study that we need to know what will be the likely environmental implications. And the committee decided to appoint Shlomo Shoham, the new commissioner for future generations, to prepare an opinion on how environment needs to be better coordinated in the trade policies, and specifically how to move forward on conducting a sustainability or an environmental impact assessment. And we're very quickly going to move on with doing that. But I would suggest that we not only need to look at the future, but we need to learn from the past. And we continue to call on the relevant ministry, environment, trade ministries, to look back and see what we can learn from the experience since 1975 and how the trade agreement has impacted our environment. We need, as the Israeli government, to set our own objectives. We need to know where we want to go. We shouldn't allow a third party, being here the European Union, to set objectives for ourselves, and particularly the corporate interests of that party, to set those objectives for us. We need to, as a government, as a people, to know where we want trade to take us. And only once we've decided for ourselves what our objectives are, then we can start talking about how we're going to get there, and not vice versa. Integrating environmental issues into the formal consultation process. We, as Friends of the Earth, have asked to attend that consultation process between the Israeli government and the EU. So far, we've been denied. We've not been permitted to attend those meetings, let alone be there sufficient discussion between the environment ministry and the trade and European Union delegation. We think that there should be an annual report published by the responsible ministry in Israel as to what are the current impacts of trade on the environment. How can we mitigate those impacts, and how are we moving forward to meet our trade, our sustainable trade objectives. Many of these calls are also not only the calls of Friends of the Earth. The Ministry of the Environment, together with UNEP, chose an Israeli researcher, Raul Drachman, an economist, who prepared a policy paper on the lessons from the EU-Israel agreement. It's not a research paper, it's a policy paper. And many of these calls are found in an agreement that the Israeli Ministry of the Environment very much supports. So that's where we stand today, that there's a great deal to do, not only in lobbying around the Mediterranean, and that's what we're doing with the network of Friends of the Earth around the Mediterranean, with other environmental organizations around the Mediterranean, but there's a very great deal that we can do here in Israel, and we can also take a lead if the sustainability assessment of the Euro-Mediterranean Partnership on how it will impact her. We will be the first country to do that, and that is something that we should be proud of, and we should seek to move forward so that we will have something to compare. We shouldn't allow just the European Union to prepare a sustainability strategy. Not that we don't trust the European Union, but by nature, everyone, a sponsor of a program, looks after its interests first. And if they're clever enough to decide that they will undertake a sustainability assessment, then I think we too should be clever enough to decide that we need to undertake a sustainability assessment.